Driving 104's fastest growing podcast. It's the legend. And the loudmouth.
Time, anywhere you are, and by whatever method you are listening, we thank you for choosing this podcast.
And social distancing.
How could I forget that? Tampa Bay Bucks, your world champions, is, what's his name?
Gene Steckerhoff?
What?
Something like that,
anyway. Welcome to the show, everybody, however you're listening, and socially distancing. Grant, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are your world champions, and in convincing fashion.
Yeah, very. I'm surprised with that game shook out. Just being honest with you, I didn't think it would be 31-9, and the under would hit.
Well, I know you and I talked about a lot of things on the previous show in our previews, and so that's what we're gonna riff on that tonight. We're gonna spend the most of the show talking about that. We'll briefly touch on the weekend of Bison basketball, kind of a mixed bag there, and then we start looking ahead because FCS football. Just around the corner.
Is he the head coach Montana State is?
I did. We'll get to that. Don't spoil it for everybody that hasn't heard it yet. Here's a hint. You might know who he is from the prior days. But since it is the Monday after the Super Bowl, for the last time this year, we close out by talking about the National Football League. Oh, that was kind of weird. That was weird. Let's try that again. The National Football League. There we go. Can't screw it up on the last one. Tampa Bay 31. Kansas City
24.
Nine. I believe if you made a dollar wager on Kansas City not scoring a touchdown, you would have won $60. Nice. There's 60-1 odds on that one. I absolutely was stunned.
What the hell was that?
How this game. From the opening kickoff.
To the halftime show was boring. The entire game was just good.
Well, and it all really, for all practical purposes, this game was over at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know it yet, but it was.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's go back to some of the things we said on the previous show. And in our preview show, we had talked about a couple of key factors. One, I was adamant that the Bucks had to get off to a fast start. They didn't.
No.
They went 3-and-out. Yep. They won the toss and elected to kick ass.
When they went through, like, uh-oh.
Wait, didn't Kansas City win the toss and deferred?
I believe
Kansas City.
But they went through, like, uh-oh.
It didn't look good.
We looked at each other, we're like, Camp was in trouble, if that's what.
Well, it was not a very pretty first series for Tampa. And I think what really kind of threw me off a little bit is that was because, you know, it was that standard, you know, 1 yard pass, 3 yard off tackle, incomplete punt. And then Kansas City comes out and they chip their way down the field with Byron Pringle.
Not funny.
Okay. And then they get the first down, and Mahomes looks like he's running well.
Yeah.
Now, that's one of the factors we talked about was the turf toe and how it was going to impact him.
Doesn't bother.
And it didn't seem to bother him at the beginning of the game, okay? Goes for 11, gets the first down, standard scramble. But then on 3rd and 8, at the 49-yard line, their own 49, Mecole Hardman can't hang on to the pass.
That was a common theme for Kansas.
Yeah.
They look out of sync and nervous in this game.
They punt. Tampa takes back over. It's a nice run for Ronald Jones, who had a nice game. Then they do the Scotty Miller, and my oh my, he gets destroyed, losing three. And then your boy Brady gets his first catch of the night. And then Brady gets sacked. And that's, you know, why is that significant? It's the only time he would get sacked all night was in the first quarter on that drive. So then here comes the inevitable Kansas City march, right? They pick up a first down on another scramble by Mahomes. They get a penalty on Jason Pierre-Paul on a deep ball, offside. They get the that. And then they go first and 10 at the 30 and go incomplete, 1 yard. And then they had Mahomes rolls out and throws that deep ball that like tits Tyreek Hill in the face mask.
Yeah.
And by this time, you can start to see that the pressure's coming.
Yeah, you can tell. Like, we really should have thought the Buccaneers' defense would be a lot better. But we all thought, it's Kansas City. No one stops Kansas City. Tampa showed you what you have to do to beat Kansas City.
And they did it early.
You have to pressure. You got... Unlike most teams, Tampa's got a really good pass rush. And Tampa can only... They only play four guys. And they can bring Devin White off the edge. They can bring him back in coverage. We should have thought this Bucs defense is a lot better than we thought it was. It's really good.
And the Bucs offense comes alive after that field goal. As they start on the 25 and go downfield, they get a nice couple of running plays from Leonard Fournette. Actually, they go three. They go to Fournette three straight plays. He gets the first down. There's a deep ball that he throws to Evans that's incomplete, but Rashad Breeland's called for a defensive holding. And then he goes to Brown for 16, Brate for 15, Fournette goes off tackle for 11, so they're chunk plays. And he hits Brown with a little out route. And then, just as Jim Nance is talking about how Tom Brady's never thrown a first quarter Super Bowl touchdown pass.
Bang, there it is.
Bang. Rob Gronkowski, who I must say, for a guy who took as much time off as he did, he looked refreshed.
Looked great.
And that the pass he caught for the touchdown was a prime example of that. He still got that quickness.
Right, but the entire game for the Bucs, Brady just looked, he was happy. He was just, this is the team I think he's always wanted to have. It's that team that's loaded with weapons and a great defense behind them, and he still has Gronk by his side. And it's just, this team that Arians and Jason Light and Brady assembled is absolutely terrific. And Gronk, I didn't think he'd be a big factor in this game, but two touchdowns later, he had a great game.
Chiefs punt on the ensuing possession. Can't get anything going. They punt. And this was the sequence that really started to decide the game after the The Bucs drive down again. You know, Gronkowski gets a big, gets a catch. And then Chris Jones commits a personal foul penalty on a 3-yard completion. All right? Stupid. That moves the ball to midfield.
Stupid.
And one of the main points I made on the show on Thursday was that Kansas City is the fourth most penalized team in the National Football League.
I say penalized.
Penalized. They commit a lot of fouls. This was the first really big one of the night that really cost
them. A lot
them.
Of frustration penalties during this game.
Well, and what happened was, it looked like Ryan Jensen, the Bucs center, takes a little swing at him, and then he retaliates. And of course, that
was always the second guy.
Always the second guy.
Always the second.
So 15 yards later, all of a sudden Tampa Bay is sitting pretty as they get a couple other runs from Ronald Jones, push it inside the field goal range. And then Mike Evans made his only catch of the night, but boy, was it a critical one. A crossing route that he nearly took to the end zone.
Nobody was there.
Yeah, he was completely wide open the first time, and only time you would get that wide open all night. And then, after an up-the-middle run, it's second and goal. And Joe Haig, God bless his heart, buys an immortality. On the tackle eligible, he's literally got the ball in his hands.
With both feet.
Oh, and Anthony Hitchens is able to knock the ball away, and we're like, son of a bitch!
Like, damn it.
Joe Haig with the first chance for the first NDSU touchdown.
Didn't you read a tweet that the NDSU Twitter page is more insufferable if you would have caught that touchdown pass?
There was a Twitter from the JMU Twitter feed that said, should have thrown it to Stinney. Oh. But can you imagine how insufferable NDSU Twitter would be if they'd have caught the touchdown pass?
Why don't you beat us? Why don't you beat more teams that are relevant?
Unbelievable. Joe Haig, absolutely the play of his life.
Ugh.
Can you imagine if they would have lost? How he would have hurt? That would have hurt for him.
You guys have still scored on the drive, right?
No, they didn't. Because, as you recall, this was fourth and goal at the...
Right, my fault.
So, Jones goes in for another yard, and it's fourth and goal at the one, and they get to the one-yard line, and does not happen. As Ben Neiman, I believe, was the one who stood the play up. And all of a sudden, you're like, uh-oh. That's a momentum killer right there, because now it's still 7-3, and Kansas City's in trouble. But after Tyreek Hill makes a catch over the middle from the one, they go incomplete, two-yard run, incomplete to Kelce, who drops the ball.
Yeah.
That was a bad drop. It's 4th and 8, all right, and they punt. And this is where the game truly turns.
Mm-hmm.
Townsend, the punter for Kansas City.
Looks like Trevor Lawrence, but if you looked at him hard enough.
Who apparently is sunshine in a punter's uniform.
Yep.
Bangs a 56-yard punt.
But wait, there's a flag.
But wait, the aforementioned Ben Neiman, who saved the touchdown on the previous possession, unfortunately holds. And after that 56-yard boomer, Bruce Arians says, kick it again, son. Kick it again.
27 or so
years. As Jay Feely, kicking specialist analyst, and we'll get to the whole broadcast piece in a little while, because Jay Feely sucks. So they make him re-kick. Oh, it's a 29-yard shankopotamus job to the 38. So the Bucks are starting on the 38-yard line, and no sooner do they get the ball that they go and face 4th and 5 at the Kansas City 22. So bring on Mr. Irrelevant, Ryan Succop, 40-yard field goal. No harm done. It's going to be good, right? Kick is up, and it is good, but wait.
There is a flag.
It's Mecole Hardman jumps offside on the kick block.
I hate that penalty on the field goal attempt, because was he really offside? It didn't look. Because unless you're right down the line, you can't tell if that's a flag or not.
Poor job by the CBS crew. They didn't get a real good analysis and look at
where there wasn't a good angle to show that.
This is the problem. This and the talk, what I was talking about earlier about Ronald Jones on the one. Because of the need to show a $5.5 million commercial, you don't get the extensive replays that you normally would in a regular season game. And Gene Steratore got a few minutes, maybe a minute to talk about it.
He was hardly
in. Well, there weren't a lot of major calls that required it, but that play in particular probably should have warranted some more replay.
I mean, can't you have like the kids with the sky cam above the end zone or something?
I think they had every conceivable shot, but the problem is I think the guy for the Chiefs is in the way on every shot. Because there was some discussion on Twitter that he was in, or that the ball had broken the plane of the goal line.
Well, you can't tell.
What
shot do you have that I don't have? I mean, it's just like
I didn't see a shot wasn't.
Was there? Do you guys have the catch 22 film or something? I mean, it's like,
you mean the all 22 film?
Thank you.
Really, the catch 22 film? Really? Seriously. Anyway.
Catch all.
So of course, the next play after the penalty, 5 yards. Sarah Thomas says first down.
Why is it such a big deal again? I just don't get it.
It's Gronkowski wide open in the back of the end zone.
Touchdown.
And now it's 14-6. Or 14-3. All right. Okay, Chiefs have been here a million times before, right?
They're down. And okay,
no problem. So here comes Mahomes. Kelce for 13. Hardman for 4. Kelce for 12. Scramble for 10. You know, your standard drive here so far. And they get it all the way down. It's 1st and 10 at the 18. And then, loss of 1. Ugh. Can't do that. Kelce for 5. Incomplete pass on the right. Field goal. That's as close as they got to the end zone, was the 14-yard line the whole night. They get the 3. It's 14-6. And then, Tampa, for all practical purposes, ices the game, all right? Tampa gets the ball at their own 29. Fournette goes up the middle. Nothing. Timeout, Chiefs. They want to get the ball back. And then Chris Godwin catches the ball over the right side, 8 yards. Timeout. 3rd and 2, Kansas City is looking to get the ball back. It's 3rd and 2 on the 37. And Brady hits this little dink ball to Gronkowski. 5 yards, first down. And then he goes deep to Evans again. Whoops, pass interference. And although Evans didn't make another catch in the whole game, that was a 34-yard penalty. All right, gets him down to the 24. And the Chiefs, by calling the timeouts, have basically preserved all their timeouts, or has preserved time on the clock. Brady goes over the middle to Fournette, and it's first and goal at the 9. And you know what happens from here. They go to Evans again, and again, it's a pass interference penalty.
That one I don't agree with.
And DPI gets called and forced
it. Is that a penalty to you?
Yes, that was a penalty. Yeah, it was a penalty.
I don't see that one.
Anyway, and then Antonio Brown runs the little sprint right pattern and gets in the end zone. And it's 21-6. And at halftime, I'm thinking, man, I don't understand the strategy, first of all, of the Chiefs, who should have let him run the clock out and going down one score instead of going down. And even 17-6 would have probably been manageable, but you went down 21-6.
Right. Not a good place to be against Tom Brady in the Bucs.
So then we go into the halftime show.
Oh, God. This song is good. The performance was not.
I guess maybe I don't get it. Is that it? Do I not get it?
I don't think it's very good either. I mean, I know I'm a man. I'm 15. But it's just like...
Thanks, Mike Gundy.
Yeah. I just didn't find it very good. Just wasn't it? I think Shakira and J-Lo last year was way better.
I like guy looks good doing the part, and he certainly can sing. But that didn't quite... I don't know, it didn't really measure up for
it. No, it was we got to do something, right? We can't get in. It just wasn't very good. And the guys in like the paper towel masks, and it's just like...
Yeah, then they all died at the end.
Yeah.
That was weird.
It just wasn't good.
No, I don't know. I mean, I've put up with... I mean, it's better than, like, having, the Cal State Sacramento Marching Band or something, like that, but...
Get, like, Lil Nas X up there. I mean...
Yeah.
Old Town Road, Holiday...
I mean, who's your ideal halftime show, then? I mean, I guess, I don't know.
I've just never really...
The other problem is, too, the demographic you're trying to appeal to, I'm not really sure of. Is it you? Is it me? Is it...
In between?
I always thought the Super Bowl halftime show was for all, like, the 18 to 45 females who are being forced to watch the game, or there's a party going on.
With their boyfriends or husbands.
Their boyfriends or husbands or kids or whatever. And I thought, they'd want to see, New Kids on the Block and Backstreet Boys and Justin Timberlake. And he was good.
Yeah. Yeah. The other half of that show.
Well. But I wasn't quite feeling it. No. So I'd have to say that's a big old... There was that one funny piece of video, though, where he's trying to go in the maze and figure it out. That was like a meme for everything on Twitter.
the Chiefs defense?
Yeah, Chiefs defense. Chiefs looking for the end zone, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it was a mess.
Were you down looking for the confetti?
We'll get to that later. Anyway, back to the game. So long halftime's over.
Half hour.
Chiefs come out. They get the ball to start because they elected to defer and kick ass in the second half. And they put together a nice drive. Mm-hmm. They go down the field and they get inside Tampa Bay territory. But yet again, Mahomes is chased all over the place. And they wind up settling for not an easy field goal either, a 52-yarder.
Hey, imagine if you turn those field goals into touchdowns. I mean, they're very well in this game.
It's 21-9, and then the true end of the game happens as Tampa goes on a 6-play, 74-yard drive. Again, two big plays do it. They convert a 3rd and 4 with a short little angle route to Fournette, who really caught the ball a lot better than I thought he would. And then Fournette goes around the end for 4. They hit Gronk again for a 25-yarder. It's a short completion over the middle, but Gronk turns it into a big gain. And then Fournette goes off the right side, and I think he could have run all the way to Pensacola. He did not get touched by anybody. on the Chiefs' defense.
No.
And that, to me, was truly the backbreaker touchdown.
Oh, absolutely. Because
that made it a three-score game.
Yeah, and you're playing Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. I don't care if it's Mahomes or not. That defense, that defensive sequence from the Chiefs, we looked at each other and we're like, this game's over. I mean, this, it's Brady. He's been here before. Sorry, Mahomes, this ain't your
year. Yep, and then on 3rd and 13 on the ensuing drive, Mahomes gets picked. He gets the ball picked off by Antoine Winfield. And there was holding on the play anyway. Shocker by Kansas City. Mm-hmm. And then the Chiefs chew up about, you know, 3.5 minutes of clock after the pick. They don't do much. They do, however, they get a key first down. It's Fournette for 15, Fournette for 6, Jones for 3. They don't do a hell of a lot there. And then it was they had 3rd and 10 on the 19, and then the only big mistake the Chiefs or the Bucks made all night was that abominable snap that went over Brady's head and cost him 15 yards. But Succop comes in and hits a 52-yarder that just sneaks in the bottom left corner, kind of like the trick shot in pool, and makes it 31-9, and that was the last scoring of the game. Mahomes would get picked one more time later on. Of course, Remmers picked up a holding penalty on that same play. So Mahomes gets, darts around, and he made, in this whole sequence, two of the greatest incompletions I think I've ever seen.
I like the first one a lot more.
Is that the one where he's falling off his... He's falling...
The first one, he's leaning toward the Chiefs' sideline. He throws, like, this weird pass to Byron Pringle in the end zone. But what's more impressive, he hits the back pylon with the ball.
And Pringle damn near caught that, too.
But, he hit the back pylon with the ball. I mean, how accurate can you be? It's like Aaron Rodgers running around and finds the back pylon.
And on the other throw he made was the one where he darts back and forth and...
Falls, falling away.
Yeah, and he still managed to get it into the face mask of somebody there.
Tyreek Hill and drops it.
Yeah, I don't...
I can't explain what happened to Kansas City. I don't know if nerves were part of it, or it was just the Bucs defense. That's how you beat Kansas City right there.
Well, and I thought the whole night, and especially as the game went into the situation where they knew they had to pass, but every play was like this for Mahomes.
Pretty much.
I mean, It looked like when you're playing Madden and they're in that mode where you have to, like, wait before you can rush the passer. Mm-hmm. There was no wait. It was just like, boom, here we go.
It's that bull rush of Aaron Donald.
And you're looking for, like, and you're trying to figure out, is it Shaq Barrett? Is it Vita Vea?
Is it
JPP who terrorized him a few times? I mean, every play that they would drop back to through. Drop back to throw. It seemed like he was just getting absolutely chased, and I was talking about in our preview show about how they really needed to put pressure on Mahomes, but they had blitzed more often. They didn't need to blitz in this game, Grant.
Todd Bowles is a very blitz-heavy defensive coordinator, but he's like, with this front four, I don't got to do anything. I just let him go.
He really did. And were you as surprised as I am that the Chiefs' offensive line, and I know they had injuries,
yeah,
but I was surprised that they were that bad.
But I think that they were really dependent on, I mean, every team depended on their tackles, but losing Eric Fisher and losing Mitchell Schwartz by two of the better tackles in this league, that's difficult for you to replace, and throwing guards out there is just a temporary solution that backfired.
Well, and again, we laughed about Mike Remmers last week, and there's a reason why, because that was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way they're bringing him back. And
he was a good guard. He's just moving to tackle. Come on.
Well, he was out of his depth.
He's a guard, not a tackle.
They didn't really need to use extra blockers or chip much because their line has always been so good. It wasn't. And Stefan Wisniewski, who has been around a long, long time, just couldn't handle it, which was the tough part. And all credit again to the outstanding defensive line. And Ndamukong Suh got a sack. And the safeties and Jordan Whitehead, they were concerned that he wasn't going to hold up. I think he played the entire game.
Yeah, he did.
And if you look at the stats, it's interesting because, again, accounting for garbage yardage and things at the end, Kansas City actually outgained Tampa by 10 yards, 350 to 340. But, again, how much of that was throwing in the late going for Mahomes, who wound up only getting sacked three times? And I was surprised when I read that number, because to me it seemed like he got sacked like six times. Mm-hmm. And for all practical purposes, he should have been.
Yeah.
Neither team was great on third down, 4-12 for the Bucks, 3-13 for the Chiefs. But that penalty stat, 11 penalties for 120 yards. I mean, the Chiefs had, I believe, given up, and I believe this was a record, six first downs via penalty, which was a Super Bowl record at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they gave one. That was at that time. I don't remember how many they eventually got in the game, but it just looked very undisciplined.
Yeah, it finally caught up to them, I think, because it's just they finally faced a team that was just as good as them, if not better. Like, I don't think they knew how to respond, because Mahomes doesn't use that kind of pass rush. But they still didn't run the football. And when they did, it was two here, three here.
Yeah, they ran for 107 yards, but
Mahomes
had 33 of those. And honestly, Allaire didn't have a run longer than 18. The longest run they had, believe it or not, in the entire game was 26 yards by Allaire. That's the longest play they had. In fact, other than Kelce's catch, which was a 33-yarder, the longest play from scrimmage was a 26-yard run for Allaire. And this is a team that routinely, they're like Madden-like, and they just go out and complete 70-yard passes and everything. And they really had Hill contained. Mm-hmm. Seven catches, 73 yards. The entire defense was centered around shutting him down. And as we talked about again before, do you want to lose by giving up the bomb to Hill? Or do you want to lose by getting cut by Kelce?
Right.
You know, and that's what they chose, because he had 10 catches for 133 yards. He was targeted more than any other receiver. And none of the supporting cast was able to help out with a big play. We talked about Hardman dropping one. Pringle dropped one. DeMarcus Robinson dropped one. Watkins got one catch. Much of a non-factor. They really took away every weapon that he had.
No, but they doubled Kelce, they doubled Hill and say, beat us. It's just,
you made a point about the formations during the game when they were on the same sides.
Well, yeah, it's just, you would think that when both are on the same side, it's easier for you to cover both of them. If I'm Eric Bieniemy, I'm thinking, if they're going to keep doubling my receivers, let's just get them both on opposite sides. Because then, you know, someone's got to be open on that side. If you put two receivers on each side with Kelce and Hill on different sides, someone's got to be open out of the two receivers that aren't Hill and Kelce.
And I didn't go back and watch the tape that closely to see the formations and how they lined up, but it looked, everything of them looked out of sync. And the only thing
Tampa
that
forced them out of sync.
Right, and I was going to say, I don't think that's an accident that it looked that way, because I really thought Tampa had a sound game plan. They were playing, you know, cover three and four across, and really limiting where the deep ball could go. And they're like, you know what, you're just going to have to beat us with your 15 to 18 intermediate throws. And those never came. Because by the time Mahomes could gawk in on receiver, he was already running for his life back there.
And the Buccaneers is one of the better, is a really young defense. It's one of the better defenses I've seen. With Tampa, the front four is so good that those linebackers can run really free with Devin White. I mean, he's making tackles. Like, he's 30 yards away from the play, he's still making tackles.
I think Devin White, if you get an honest assessment of who probably should have been the MVP,
Devin White,
you could have made a good case
if
for
Dexter
White.
Jackson can win the MVP, he can win.
I mean, he had a pick. He had 12 tackles, including two for loss. And again, I know why Brady wins the MVP, and I get
it's
it. And it's probably, and you knew that was going to be the case. I would tell you even also that Shaq Barrett, I thought, had such an impact on the game. And even though he only had one tackle, it was a sack, but he was a monster. He hit Mahomes a few times. In fact, he had four recorded quarterback hits in the game. I thought that he absolutely was the standout on the defense in that game, other than White. Winfield, by the way, Antoine Winfield Jr., a guy that I wish we would have drafted.
Should have drafted.
But the best part of the entire game at the end was after he got that pick. And it was after the pick he made.
Yeah.
And he flashes the deuces to Tyreek Hill.
and says, "Screw you,"
and he gets penalized for it.
He walks up, he's like,
flashes it. But I didn't realize at the time, and I looked this up earlier in the season in that previous game when the Chiefs beat the Bucks. Hill did the same thing to Winfield when he was going into the end zone, flashed in the deuces. So I'm totally on board with that. You reap what you sow.
Yep.
You reap what you sow. So, again, you've heard all the superlatives already about the Buccaneers and how great a season they've had, and Tom Brady 7 titles, and all the stupid statistics that are involved. In your mind, Grant, if they played with a healthy offensive line, does Tampa still win this game?
Yes, by a closer margin. Yes, by a closer margin.
On this night, I think you would have been right.
Yeah, I just think that Kansas City, that Tampa had such a great defensive plan that it didn't matter if Mahomes had protection. He wasn't finding Tyreek downfield. It just wasn't going to happen. And Kelce, yeah, he still had the same amount of receptions and the same amount of targets. But the Kansas City needs to do some soul searching about, we need to incorporate our other weapons just as well as we incorporate Hill and Kelce into this offense, because they don't look at Hardman. They don't use Hill and Kelce as decoys sometimes. You can get that deep ball to Hardman.
What's weird is that we'd seen them play a type of the type of game they needed to play last night was the one they played earlier in the year against Buffalo, where they ran the ball for a whole bunch of yards.
But this is an Andy Reid offense, and it's a West Coast offense. You do not run the football under that kind of offense, and it just doesn't work.
And they needed to settle for 6 and 8 when they tried instead to get 25.
Yeah.
And that doesn't always work. Now, other fair or unfair question. Andy Reid's kid and the outside linebacker coach, Britt Reid, who was in that automobile accident a few days ago, do you think that's on the mind? Do you think that's a distraction?
I think it's on his mind, but at the same time, you're coaching in the Super Bowl. You need to think about the game at that moment. Think about your family.
That's easy to say.
But right, but it's on your mind, but you still. But remember, this is Andy Reid in game management, so those two don't usually always.
Yeah, they weren't good.
But it's just.
And you know what the thing about that is that over the years he's been criticized for it, but when you have an offense like this, it really doesn't matter.
But Andy, they're not giving you the deep ball. Run the football. You got Edwards-Helaire, you got Le'Veon Bell, Darrell Williams.
I don't think Bell even had a touch.
And you have Damian Williams on the COVID list. I mean, if they can turn their...
Bell didn't touch the ball once.
Yeah, if you can turn your mostly pass-heavy offense, incorporate the backs more. You don't see a lot on their plays, not a lot of backs coming out of the backfield. It's usually empty set or it's a straight handoff. They need to, if you can incorporate those backs.
They did try to run their dumbass option plays.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Yeah. If you're gonna use your offense the same way you do next year, if you can get the backs on the Fangles, I mean, Marshall Faulk is one of the best multi-dimensional athletes, thank you. And he's that kind of athlete is what the Chiefs need to be really, really scary. They're scary enough as it is. But if you can turn Clyde Edwards-Helaire into that blocker and pass catcher that Marshall Faulk was that made the greatest show on turf go, if they can develop him into something like that, I don't know how you could stop Kansas City.
Yeah.
But without that, they're just hell bent on two receivers, and those don't work. They're screwed.
Yeah. If you look at Mahomes' passing on the night, he had 49 attempts in the game. Mm-hmm. All right. And to your point, half of those attempts were targeted for either Hill or Kelce. All right?
When they're being double covered.
And the other 7, they had 10 to the backs, so not long throws.
Checkdowns.
Yeah. Hardman got targeted 6 times and only with 2 catches. Now, look at Brady, who threw 29, you know, an efficient 29, but he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different receivers, including Joe Haig, that were targeted in the game, whereas Kansas City had 8, and Brady targeted each of them, every one of them, more than once, except for Evans, and of course Joe Haig, who's not exactly a target machine,
right?
But interesting to see that distribution of offense. the Chiefs will be back.
Yeah.
There's no question. And so let's spend a minute talking about how the Chiefs rebound from this. I think they need to address some offensive line depth in the draft. Now, they're going to get Levert Tardenay back, or whatever his name is, the guy who opted out, and he's doing a COVID doc this year.
Yeah, he's a COVID doc in Canada.
They'll get Mitchell Schwartz back, obviously, from injury. Fisher, ACL tear, he might not be ready to go to start the year, but they'll certainly be whole on the offensive line.
Right.
I don't think there's any question the Chiefs are going to get back and probably would still be my AFC pick.
Mm-hmm.
What else, in your opinion, do they need to do to get back to this point?
I think they need more of a pass rush. It's just, you have Chris Jones.
They have a very mediocre defense.
And then it's, they have stars on defense, but it's not across the board. I mean, their linebacking core, I can't even name their linebackers. Get a linebacker. I mean, Anthony Hitchens is a declining player.
And
by the way, Daniel Sorensen is not should not be a starting caliber safety in this league. So their corners are decent. Iron Matthews a great player, but address your safety, a linebacker, a D lineman. It's just they need to apply more pressure and just be better in the secondary.
Now, right now, according to what I've read, they're going to be $19 million over the cap in 2021. Okay. Now, Fisher's entering the final year of his contract, and he's got the ACL tear. So that's going to be a little bit of an issue. Tyrann Mathieu is a $15 million cap hit. I don't know if they can afford not to. Mm-hmm. Sammy Watkins is probably gone.
Yep.
Daniel Sorensen is a free agent.
Gone.
Bye. I think Robinson's probably gone, too.
And maybe adding another really deep threat receiver might be better, but it's just, I mean, their supporting cast isn't as good as I thought it was.
Their center, Austin Ryder, is an unrestricted free agent, too. I didn't know that. Now, so to me, I think they've got some holes to fill, but for the most part, I think they're going to be okay.
Yeah.
I think they'll be back, but Tony Romo, I thought, made a really good point on the broadcast when he was talking about, if you're going to put Mahomes, and I think we've all established now, the standard that Mahomes is going to be held to
is Brady,
okay? Mahomes will never, let's put it this way, you'll be drinking alcohol before Mahomes is able even to think about tying it.
Yeah. I mean,
because that's 6 years away.
He has to win 7 rings more than he does now to pass.
Well, it's 7-1.
Yeah.
And you'll have to win 7, you're right, because if they wind up tied, Brady's always going to have the tiebreaker. Yeah. Assuming they don't play again.
Yeah, because he beat him.
And he's beaten him 2 out of 3
uh-huh.
in meaningful games. And the biggest game,
uh-huh.
he beat him soundly.
Uh-huh.
So let's put that aside, that Mahomes has got. Now, Brady went for a long stretch there in the middle of his career where he didn't go to any.
He didn't go anything, yeah.
So I don't think we have to, but here's a really good question, and maybe you know the answer because I don't. Mahomes is got this $500 million contract. He's going to be part owner of the Royals. He's about to be a father. He's got all this going on. Does he have, and I don't know the answer and I'm not judging,
mm-hmm.
does he have the same, the ganas, as they would say, the desire to be like Brady and be almost maniacal in his pursuit of excellence, cutting the family off, doing the TB12 thing, living like a monk, eating, you know,
avocado ice cream.
There's a part of me that thinks Mahomes won't do that.
I think you're right. And I just because,
I mean, am I off
Brady
on that?
Brady had to work for everything he got. I mean, from starting in college was a nightmare for him.
Right.
I mean, him and Drew Henson were battling out the entire in the late 90s out there. And then he gets drafted by the Patriots late in the draft in the 6th round. It's like, you won't be any good. And he keeps defying critics his entire career. Until now, where he's in his mid-40s and he's winning Super Bowls. Don't you wish you could do that?
Yeah. No, I do.
But Mahomes hasn't really had to work for anything.
No. He's got natural ability that...
His dad was a pitcher for the Twins. He's had God-given abilities. Can throw the ball 80 yards without it breaking a sweat. He went to Texas Tech because he could. He set passing records because he could. He was the 10th overall pick. He sat behind a great quarterback in Alex Smith for a year, learned under a very veteran quarterback. And then because he could get to the AFC Championship game and win a Super Bowl, he did that. I don't think he has the same drive. Maybe Andy Reid does, maybe get another Super Bowl to cement his legacy, but I just don't think he has that inner drive to just get it done. And he might win two or three more, and I could see him winning three or four rings with the Chiefs, but he ain't winning eight. He might be the second GOAT, if you want to say, on the Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks with Peyton and Marino, but he's not going to be Brady.
This was a learning for Mahomes that I think will, in the long run,
be good.
Probably serve him in good stead. Mm-hmm. Because even Brady had to lose a game like that. But he just did it later in his career. Yeah. And Brady's was so unexpected.
2007.
Right. But by the time he got to that game when you're on top of the world, king of the world, baby, king of the world, and then it all came crashing down on him.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if you're Mahomes, if this, you don't take a step back and say, hey, I need to make everybody around me better. And that's, to a man, the Bucks all talked about how much Brady and just the attitude and the adjustment of the culture makes so much of a difference. Because we all know that Brady is not the most athletic guy. He never was to begin with. But when it comes to overall team leadership, guts, mm-hmm. and knowing what to do in these situations, he's the man.
Yeah.
And there's no questioning it now.
I saw this image of Mahomes' first three seasons looks like Russell Wilson's first three seasons. First year, playoff loss. Second year, Super Bowl. Third year, losing to Tom Brady in a Super Bowl. I don't think Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson are the same quarterback, but they've had very similar careers up to this point. But I mean, Mahomes is by far the best quarterback in this league, but you gotta pull everybody together. Just because you're the $500 million man doesn't mean you can't help everybody else.
And if you're Mahomes, in the back of your mind, you know Cleveland,
Buffalo,
Baltimore, all have quarterbacks around the same age that will definitely. And again, Baker Mayfield is going to become Patrick Mahomes.
And you got Cincinnati and Pittsburgh.
Burrow's coming up. Roethlisberger, for all his limping, is still around. The AFC is a much tougher.
The Chargers,
much tougher road to hoe. And that's in their own division.
Yeah, their division's loaded. I think their division might be pretty good.
So, regardless, I think they'll be back. The Bucks. I tell you what.
What makes you uncertain about Tampa Bay?
Well, I wonder with Brady, is this more than a 3-year window? Because he'll obviously play next year, but then it's 45.
He said he wanted to play until he's 45.
And he looks tremendous.
He looks great. I mean, don't you wish you looked that well?
Yeah, I'd look like shit compared to that.
Except
but,
the hair, though.
But yes, my hair is fantastic. But if you look at Brady's mechanics, his guile, for lack of a better description,
he still looks the exact same.
His supporting cast, if you could put that team around him, yes.
Why would you leave?
If you have that kind of defense around there, too, it sure helps. Now, Shaq Barrett made himself a lot of money in this postseason.
Oh, yeah.
He's a free agent. That's going to be interesting.
But, I mean, think of the NFC. I mean, it's wide open.
We talked about this last night, the changing of the guard for Tampa Bay is interesting. Because if you look at their, let's just again look at their free agent. Levante David's a free agent. Chris Godwin's a free agent. We talked about Barrett. Obviously, Gronk's a free agent. He's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And Dominican Sue's a free agent.
If Brady is there, Gronk is there.
Antonio Brown's a free agent.
Yeah.
Fournette's a free agent, obviously. Ryan Succop.
Kicker.
LeSean McCoy, he's gone.
Yeah.
Steve McClendon, Raheem Nunez-Roche, Ross Cockrell, Ryan Smith, some of these bit players. Joe Haig's a free agent. Yeah, it's not going to be all, you know, wine and roses there, but I like their chances. The thing about the NFC, and we talked about this, you and I did last night as we were watching, the NFC changing of the guard now is going to be very evident. It's pretty obvious Drew Brees is going to hang it up.
I said it last night. What are the Vikes going
to
do?
Well, hold before we go to the Vikes. Let's finish up with the Tampa Bay piece. Their division is going to be
loaded.
Well, Is Jameis Winston the answer in New Orleans?
Hell no, but he's going to have to be for a year.
Well, let's just talk about the division, because they didn't even win. Remember, they didn't even win the division this year.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan's old. Carolina's still going to struggle. The division should be theirs for the taking. Green Bay will have Rodgers back.
The Vikes
The Vikes defense should be better. But it'll be ultimately, again, it'll come down to how mediocre is Kirk Cousins. Chicago may get Wentz. Now has Goff. You know,
and Dallas and take your kneecap off.
Dallas will be better. But still, to me, there's no compelling reason why Tampa Bay wouldn't be the favorite, because I think their defense is really, to me, they can hold that defense together.
But you got to re-sign a lot of guys.
Remember, I like the defense in the preseason. That's why I picked them to go to the Super Bowl. And although ultimately I didn't pick them to win the Super Bowl.
I should have.
But ultimately, in the end, I thought their defense would be good enough with the offensive weapons they had. Their offense wasn't quite as good as I thought it might be, but the defense was far better than I thought it was going to be.
We really should have seen the Buccaneers are going to be there. I mean,
I did.
But, you know, throughout the season, I meant.
Right.
No, 7-5 in the Super Bowl. I mean, with that team that Brady had, they should have gone 13-3.
But
really.
Chris Berman talked about this last night. They had the bye week later than anybody else.
The last couple of Super Bowl champions, bye week, week 9, bye week, week 10, bye week 11, bye week 12, bye week 13. It's the last about five Super Bowl champs.
Yeah, it's funny how that works.
Yeah.
Out on that whole deal, isn't it? Where they just, and of course, with this season in particular, you just needed that time to, you know, to gel, I guess, as a defense.
I'm just worried about the Vikes. It's just, you know, one of the better rosters in this league, and yet you can only win 7 games.
Right.
I just don't get it.
Well, plenty of time to talk Vikings free agency and stuff down the road, but Vikes are going to be a playoff team next year. I'm reasonably certain of that.
But the schedule they have, it's just ridiculous.
Let's talk about a few other things. We'll get into the Vikes. You don't need to frustrate yourself with the Vikings, but things observed from just an overall broadcast. You liked this part.
I love the Lombardi.
The Lombardi hologram was a little creepy.
That was great.
I thought Nance and Romo were solid.
I love Romo. I can listen to Romo all day. Can we please put Nance back in Mac and Madden just so I can hear him?
Yeah.
Like, in future Maddens, please, if it's a Fox game, can we please get Buck and Aikman, or Romo and Nance, or Michaels and Collinsworth? Like, can we please have that in the Madden game?
And then there was the streaker. And if you haven't heard it, we've got to play the Kevin Harlan call, because, again, I'm convinced that Harlan...
he wants a streaker to go on.
In another universe, Kevin Harlan would be the lead play-by-play guy for either one of his networks. But he's so good. And, of course, he's a tremendous NBA broadcaster. But this was Kevin Harlan as you remember, about 5 minutes to go, the streaker gets on the field last night. And here's Kevin Harlan's Westwood One radio call. 45 seconds of glory. Here it is.
5:03 to go. Someone has run on the field. Some guy with a bra. And now he's not being chased. He's running down the middle of the 40. Arms in the air and a victory salute. He's pulling down his pants. Put up your pants, my man. Pull up those pants. He's being chased to the 30. He breaks a tackle from a security guard. The 20, down the middle, the 10, the 5. He slides at the 1, and they converge on him at the goal line. Pull up your pants. Take off the bra and be a man. And the players with hands on hips at the other end of the field are looking at him and shaking their head and saying, why, oh, why is this taking place in a Super Bowl?
So good.
Pull up those pants.
Pull up those pants, man. Oh, my God. Phenomenal stuff.
Why can't you just show up on TV? Like, come on.
Phenomenal stuff from Kevin Harlan.
As always.
As always, the best in the business when it comes certainly to radio broadcasting. Commercial-wise,
pretty good.
I don't know about pretty good, but I thought they were all pretty average.
The M&M one was the average.
But the M&M one, which we'll play now, this was our personal favorite of the evening.
I feel bad for kicking your seat on purpose.
I'm sorry for mansplaining. That's when a man...
I know what it is. I wish it had just told you it's a boy.
I wish you didn't have to hear all that.
Sorry I called you Karen.
That's my name.
Sorry your name is Karen.
I promise I will not eat any more of your friends.
Really?
Okay, it might happen one more time.
So the M&M's one with the visuals, that was my ad meter winner for the night.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of people like the Will Ferrell Norway commercial.
I didn't find that one very funny.
The Rocket Mortgage commercial, apparently, with Tracy Morgan, those are the ones that won the USA Today ad meter thing, and I guess I'm not a big Tracy Morgan guy, but I don't think I particularly enjoy it. Apparently that one was kind of rigged too, because a lot of people that own stock in Quicken were, like Larry Fitzgerald and a few of these others, apparently were pumping up the vote on Twitter, so I don't know. The Alexa commercial with Michael B. Jordan in there, I thought that was creepy.
More creepy than
in my opinion. The other funny one, there were some, you know, these, you know, I didn't think the Cheetos one with Ashton Kutcher was that good. With the Shaggy song from, you know, 2000 or whatever that was. I did, to some extent, enjoy Drake from State Farm.
Yeah, that's okay.
But the funny part is, when that ad appeared on the screen, I'm like, look, it's all the quarterbacks Tom Brady beat. And it was funny. I guess I got a little bit of a honk more maybe than I thought I would out of Doritos and Matthew McConaughey.
Nah.
No? Okay. The Bud Light Lemons, you know, the lemonade seltzer.
Yeah.
Didn't quite.
No.
But that we all enjoyed the DoorDash with the Sesame Street characters.
Yeah, it wasn't the right one though. Like just the short. But to get started, that nom nom nom.
Nom 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 nom. The Jason Alexander hoodie was a little bit creepy. That was the Tide ad. I of course enjoyed the Bud Light Legends commercial very much, where they had, you know, all the guys like Dr. Gally Weekich and all these other old, yes, I am. That was great.
That, the Paramount Plus with Beavis and Butthead on there.
that had you cracking up pretty good.
You said crack.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Well, I thought it was pretty good.
Let's play real quick the Buccaneer Real Men of Genius. This only played in Tampa, apparently, but we want everybody to hear it, so we'll play this one for you.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Buccaneers of Tampa Bay.
Buccaneers of Tampa Bay.
You and your salty captain batten down the hatches and scuttled opponents, navigating the stormy seas of the NFC and pirate metaphors with ease.
Shiver me timbers.
Gronk once again caused opponents to ask, how will we defend ourselves if his planet sends more like him?
Half man, half machine.
You're the only team to win a Super Bowl at home. Any stadium can boast state-of-the-art amenities. Only yours can boast a pirate ship with a talking animatronic parrot.
Polly want a cracker.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, O conquerors of KC, because you're not only legends, you're Super Bowl 55 champs.
Congrats to the Bucks, you're the champs.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, wasn't
bad. I haven't heard the Real Men of Genius in a while. That was nice. So that was a good one, too. Any other ads I'm missing here that you... there was, of course, the Cadillac hand scissor guy. That was weird. Wayne's World, of course, which I'd explain to you what that was, because you didn't know. That's kind of disturbing. And then, of course, you mentioned the Paramount commercials and all that. That was, and then Coming to America, the trailer for that was on there, too. So that was pretty good. And Dolly Parton was on there. I guess the rest of it was all right, I guess, huh?
It was okay.
No, nothing else you liked about that?
It was okay.
Okay. You seem rather unenthused about the Super Bowl ads this year.
Wasn't that good.
Okay.
Just saying.
All right. Well, that's fine. But also, we should see what else is going to happen here. Perhaps this. This, of course, is the famous Disney commercial. And
Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski, you and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have just won the Super Bowl. What are you going to do next?
That was good. Gronk, by the way, I guess was going there today. Look out, everybody. Gronk and Disney World? Oh man.
Boy.
There might be some overturned stands along like the the Hall of Presidents or something like that. Pretty good stuff. Grant, anything else on the Super Bowl we're missing?
Really.
I think we got it covered. All right. Well, we leave the NFL season behind, and of course, the next time we probably talk serious pro football. Heck, it'll be draft time, which means it'll probably be time for the second annual Legend and the Loudmouth live. Legend and the Loudmouth live at the NFL draft. Can't wait for that. That's going to be here before you know it, right?
Right.
I mean, holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be, it's going to be 2 months until the draft, but so we'll see what happens. Want to touch real quickly. Bison basketball gets a split over the weekend, and not a real good split.
No.
Oral Roberts, man, I tell you, that team is, they are the number one scoring team in the Summit League, and Max Amos and Kevin O'Banner, tell you what, that's not a team I want to face. That's not a team I want to face in a tournament.
There's not a lot of teams I want to face. I mean, in this tournament, think of the Summit League as a whole now. You got the defending champion Bison that are young and inexperienced.
But they also don't score very well. They run into scoring droughts.
I forgave Dave Richmond's offense because they had Shaheed and they had Ward and they had all those scorers. And now that they don't have those guys, it's just, you know, pass on the perimeter, kick inside, cut off, kick it back outside. It's like, just get it into the damn paint. It's just, you got the Jacks that are, you know, well developed, the Yotes at Amude isn't really good. But it's these middle of the pack teams that are much better. Oral Roberts, I swear to God, Max Amos, the ball from 35 feet, he was making it. It's just...
Yeah, Max Amos is the Steph Curry of Summit League.
And then UMKC, which is trapping, aggressive defense.
They are the number one defensive team in the Summit League, and they give up almost 4 points a game less than anybody else. Now, they can't score themselves worth
of
shit.
Yeah, they can't score.
But it'll be interesting because the South Dakota and South Dakota State, South Dakota Corn, split this weekend at Frost.
Any of the top six teams in this thing combined.
So South Dakota is 9-1 and leads. South Dakota State's 5-1 with an .833 winning percentage. The Bison now 9-3 at .750, and ORU is fourth at seven with a .700 winning percentage. So what it's going to come down to is those top four are pretty well settled. UND is going to be the 5. UMKC and Western will be the 6 and the 7. Denver and Omaha will scrap it out to be the 8. Denver's terrible. Well, Omaha's worse.
Somehow they're worse.
Western is not a very good basketball team, fundamentally. UMKC will give somebody some fits. And I think that first-round game, you really do not want to see UMKC be your first opponent after a two-week layoff.
If the Rabbits draw UMKC, I would pick UMKC to win that game.
You know what game I now really want to see, and I didn't before, is I want to see ORU play Kansas City.
Yeah.
I really would like to see that game again.
Number one offense, number one defense.
Right.
But it's always in those scenarios, it seems like, number one defense usually.
They split.
Yeah.
At Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts won the first one 60-58 in a rock fight.
And then
UMKC actually scored 81.
They scored 81?
Believe it or not. And they actually had Oral Roberts down by double digits in that game. So I would be real curious to see those two go at it again.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line is that NDSU now have the bye week this weekend, so they don't play. So they've got time to rest up for their final four matches with
South
the two league leaders.
South Dakota.
And so it'll be interesting to see this next weekend what happens as the Bison take a seat and watch an interesting weekend coming up. UND-USD, that'll be UND scrappy. South Dakota State Oral Roberts is the big series coming up this weekend.
Now, I mean, UND is going to find a way to get a split because that's all they do.
And it's at UND. South Dakota State, though, has to go to the Maybe Center, because why not?
Sorry. I might go.
It's a possibility. So that'll be the weekend slate.
So do we want to split there, too, then?
Well, now that the Bison have their split with Oral Roberts, I'd like to see ORU, see if they could sweep. That would be ideal for the Bison to sweep, because it would put less pressure. It would also put a lot of pressure on South Dakota State, because again, remember, they only have 6 league games, and the most they will get is 10. Mm-hmm. So a third loss would put them at a 700 winning percentage. That would be the best they can do. And they still have to come to Fargo. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take a guess the Bison will at least split. Now, the way the Bison have it now with 9-3 with four games left, my realistic expectation is an 11-5 record.
Mm-hmm. And that's fair.
That's a split each weekend.
That's fair.
And if they were to do any better than that,
if they swept South Dakota, I wouldn't be surprised.
No, and they've already beaten them once. Remember this year, they beat them at the Dakota Showcase.
Why is USD good? It just doesn't compute with me why they're so damn.
They good. Do have the best dressed head coach in the Summit.
That is true.
Todd Lee, the general.
Back hair. I mean, that man. Is,
yeah, he does look good.
I think he's better hair than you do, but that's.
That might be. He's definitely better looking than I am.
Yeah, but. Like, is it just the mood, or is it like, why are they so damn good?
Putzelwhite's the other guy that is.
Who?
AJ Putzelwhite. He's the son.
I'm assuming he's a white guy.
Yeah, he's the son of the women's coach, Don Putzelwhite. And he transferred to play with his,
Play with his dad.
Yeah, with mommy.
Mommy and daddy.
So, speaking of the women, we should talk about them just briefly before we go here.
They're kicking ass.
The women had they still have some games where they kind of look like they're, young.
Yeah, but with the women's team, that's good with me. Like, it's like, they're still winning games.
Right, and they did get the weekend sweep over RU. Now, the other thing that has not worked in NDSU's favor is, as South Dakota State swept USD at Frost this weekend, by percentage point, the Bison are now in second, which is stunning. But I think the Bison have now erased. I mean, they're 9-3. There's no way now the Bison can finish any lower in win total than most teams below them. ORU's 4-4, UNKC's 4-5, etc. There's no way anybody's going to win more than they will, except for the South Dakota schools. And if Jory Collins is able to get that team on the 3 line, and that would set up probably a matchup against either South Dakota or South Dakota State in the Summit League semi, and that's really all you can ask for.
But in this conference, the Summit League for the women's teams, finishing third is a badge of honor. Finishing second above one of them is even better.
Well, and the Bison are going to get their shot. They're going to get,
like, can you just mail Jory Collins the Coach of the Year award?
Well,
now?
Here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. It's very likely the Bison women could wind up 9-7 in the conference. They're 9-3 now, but their last four are against these two teams.
Yeah.
So the schedule's worked out in their favor. Now, if they just get one win in one of these games, that's a huge, huge thing.
That's a huge thing for the program in general. If they split with both of them, that's even bigger.
So they've got four shots to win one game.
Mm-hmm.
And get them to 10 conference wins, that's a huge milestone for this program.
What less than they won 10 conference games?
I don't know if they've ever won 10 conference games in the Summit. I really don't. I can't think if they have.
Why the hell did this take so long?
Well, I wonder if this is a situation. You know how the Bison football got so good because the Gophers and Brewster and those guys, they couldn't recruit their own backyard.
Uh-huh.
The Tylee Irwins of the world and some of these other South Dakota players that would have been on the Bison recruiting radar weren't because, Carolyn Dehoff and Walseth couldn't recruit locally, and they went to the international stuff, and which is all stupid.
Why were they recruiting out there?
Yeah, it didn't work.
No.
And that's why she got fired.
Geislerova's been pretty good.
Geislerova and Dietz are the holdovers from. And you got to give a lot of credit to Dietz. She does not have the most talent, but she is tough down low, and she will never quit. And I think with just the athleticism, Hamlin, Cobbins, Renee Hopkins, all these players are just, they're very difficult. Katie Deaton's the other one. Anybody can score, and I think they're not afraid to take shots. They play with a level of athleticism you don't normally see in the women's program.
Right.
Since
the 90s.
Yeah, since the Amy Reilly days. So I think good things are ahead no matter what. And a Summit League semi, again, would be a huge block to get to for this team. But the next level is probably still a year or two away.
Yeah.
But, boy, they're having a good time.
If they broke through and made the tournament,
That would be big for
the entire basketball program in general.
Like, yeah.
If both teams could break through.
And what I always remember is the first time we talked about the Bison going to Division I, everybody thought women's basketball would be the first sport to get anywhere. And it's going to be probably the last one across the finish line.
And even track and field got to a better spot than Wins Mouse.
I think they always thought that there would be track and field success because of the individual routes and golf and some of the smaller sports.
I mean, is golfing that successful?
Yes.
Really?
Well, I mean, all I need to do is point to Amy Olsen's career, and you can see how she
The football program, which we thought would be okay, becomes budding dynasties.
Well, speaking of the football, so we've got Thursday and Monday. Over the next, we haven't decided the order yet, but what we're going to do is we're going to be talking about the upcoming FCS season. We're going to be talking about the Valley and then the Bison position by position we're going to go through. We'll start that on Thursday with our Thursday show. We'll be talking about, in some way, shape, or form, or order, Bison offense, defense, special teams, what we've got coming back. We'll talk...
This is perfect. I'm writing an article about this. This is perfect.
We'll talk about the... the Valley, and who's in, who's out. This is UND's first year in the Valley football-wise full, so this will be interesting for them. And then we'll talk about FCS nationally. The preseason polls come out today. The Bison are obviously number one.
The Jacks are number two. That's BS.
Yeah, and so that sets up some interesting matchups down the road, and we'll talk about all those things. And we've got that. And then next Thursday, our first game preview of the year. Bison Youngstown will start off. And so we'll preview that. So you can basically count on, in our show, Bison Preview and Bison Review every Thursday and Monday. And we'll next 2 months on our show, in addition to the talking hoops and their usual, that's going to be FCS football and a lot of it.
Yeah,
and that's good. And that's going to take us through mid-April.
That's what we want on this show.
And that's what we want to do on this show. So look forward to a fun couple of months coming up.
What about Montana State here?
Oh, yes, we need to get that news in quickly. Would you like to reveal the news?
I guess so. Does anybody remember that former Bison offensive coordinator we had for the first couple titles? He went to Wyoming with Craig Bull. It's right on the tip of my tongue. Brent Vegan was the name, right?
Vegan.
He's your new head coach at Montana State.
And so Brent Vegan today announced as the head coach of Montana State. Apparently Jeff Fisher didn't get the job. Little surprised, but it's possible that depending on how long Bull wants to stick around, I always figured Bull would coach long enough to just turn the reins over to Vegan. Well, now Veegs is going to get his own shot at Montana State.
Do you feel like they did that to get a shot at the Bison by bringing one of their own guys?
Nope.
Why do you think they did it then?
I think they offered Vegan a lot of money.
Is that the only reason?
Well, if you're a Vegan, and I have, by the way, look at the quarterbacks that I've mentored. Josh Allen. The quarterbacks that I've taken. Brock Jensen.
Josh Allen. Carson Wentz.
I mean, it's a pretty good selling point on his own.
Yeah, but at Montana State, Tucker Roofing is all you got to work with. It's Tucker Roofing. He's terrible.
The other advantage is, too, they are not playing a spring season.
They are not. That's true.
So they will have time to implement that. And certainly Vegan can recruit a little bit.
But they got a quarterback problem down there.
Well, then I guess if you got a problem, Vegan will solve it. That's what's going to happen. So, no. Okay. Well, there we go. So Brent Vegan, get a coach at Montana State.
Hopefully he gets to win the Brawl of the Wild. Great name.
That's better than the Dakota Marker. Absolutely true. 100% agree with that. Hey, get in touch with the show. Our email is legendandloudmouth@gmail.com. That's legendandloudmouth@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @legendloudmouth. That's @legendloudmouth. And check out our website, which is legendandloudmouth.com. That's legendandloudmouth.com for links to our previous shows and why Coastal Carolina will always and forever still suck. Grant, how do we find you?
Follow me on Instagram and Snapchat @legend1. Follow me on TikTok @legend. And follow us on Instagram, @legend_pod. That's @legend_pod. DM us if you like the show, hate the show, we don't care. DM us, please, and subscribe to the YouTube channel.
I have to work on still on that ending. It's just...
I don't have much time to do it.
There were like 100 shows in a row where you didn't butcher the ending, and now it's all like every time it's something. Professional radio.
It's part of the shtick.
Professional podcast operation. Again, FCS, Bison football, Missouri Valley football. Here we come, baby. Just when football season's over, it's beginning all over again. We'll start talking FCS football on Thursday. It's the Legend and the Loudmouth. See you then, everybody.